Thank you for coming. So is the slide up there? I can't see. Okay, thank you. Some people thought I was in the other room. I apologize if you wanted to see something more interesting than this, but you can't leave. Okay? For me, this all started with an article I wrote over the winter about Mattie Lou and Manny Mota, who played in this fair city in the late 60s. They were a center field platoon for the Pirates. And as a kid, they were kind of, this is sort of at the very early stages of my following the game. I really liked both of these players. I liked their names. I liked their baseball cards. I liked the fact that they looked exotic. Over the years, I really grew to really admire both players. They had long careers in the game. And I wrote an article about Matty, actually all the Alou brothers for the Bio Projects. And so I was going to write this story about their platoon. And what was particularly interesting about this platoon, you may remember, in 1966, the first year they platooned together, they platooned 3 years, Matty Lou won the batting title. He hit 342 as a strictly platoon player. And Mota, who was the right-handed hitter, hit 332, which would have been the second highest batting average in the National League had he qualified. And yes, they were basically batting average players. That's what they did. They didn't have a very dynamic game otherwise. But in 1966, 67, 68, 330 averages were pretty rare. And they were both very good offensive players and very good players because they were center fielders. So I wrote the story about their lives together because they grew up not far from each other in the Dominican, and they were signed by the Giants about the same time. They were center fielders, and the Giants did not have an opening in center field that time. And they ended up in Pittsburgh. They got there at different times, but they ended up in Pittsburgh in 1966, and this is how they became a platoon. So when I say they platoon, when the right-handed pitcher faced the Pirates, Alou played 97.5% of the time, which is pretty strict. And when they faced a left-hander, Mota played 95% of the time. So again, this is what we'd all consider to be a pretty strict platoon. And I define something I call the platoon score, which basically is what percentage of the time does the manager sort of adhere to this platoon. So if they play the wrong guy, the lefty against the lefty, then that is not adhering to the platoon. The only game they didn't play at all in center field was a game that the Pirates training staff gave a routine eye test to some of the Pirates in the clubhouse, and both Mota and Alou had an allergic reaction so they were pretty similar players, let me tell you. And Clemente played. So I presented this story, and I thought it was fun. But what I didn't know really was how common this was. Is a 97% platoon a rare thing? Has anybody ever done it 100% of the time? So I decided I would look into that. And the way I did that, like I normally do, is I asked Tom Ruane to send me a bunch of data, which he did. And then a couple months later, I worked with this data using Baseball Reference to tease out a lot of these platoons. And then I was a little suspicious about some of the work I'd done, so that I went to Tom Ruane again and said, can you send me some more specific data? I gave him some better criteria, and he did. So thank you, Tom, if you're in the room. He was certainly a godsend. So the platoon score, as I said, is basically just the simple percentage. What I call a perfect platoon is 100% of the time. So how often does that happen? And something I call a full-time platoon is, and these numbers are somewhat arbitrary, is that you have 80% compliance on both halves of the platoon. I allow switch hitters, but only one half. So Pete Rose can't platoon with Pete Rose, okay? I only have starting lineups, so if they switch in the second inning, I don't know that, because the data I have, the data I asked for from Tom was starting lineups. The database, by the way, goes back to 1908, which is when RetroSheet has the data. I know they have 1907 now, but I didn't have the heart to go back to Tom again to get that other year. And I don't care about what the player does on their off days. I mean, if they play other positions or their backup third baseman or whatever, I'm just talking about this one position. So I'm going to talk about this little codicil about the 80% compliance on both halves. You may remember in the Dodgers in the 50s, they very rarely faced a left-handed pitcher because of their lineup. So in 1956, one example, Duke Snider played virtually every game against righties. There were only 14 games against lefties, most of which were started by Snider, but Carl Ferrillo started three of them. So strictly speaking, if you suss out this data, you could say that these two had a platoon score of 91. Now, that's unsatisfying, right? They obviously weren't a platoon. So that's when I said you needed both sides to comply. So I would argue that if Ferrillo had started 12 of those 14 games, then this would be a platoon. It would be an unsatisfying, perhaps, platoon, but it would be a platoon. So that's why I added this clause. So for some context, you all know that when you have a platoon, the left-handed hitter bats more than the right-handed hitter because there are more right-handed pitchers. That has varied over time, anywhere from 20% of the starters that you face are lefties, all the way up to close to 40%. If you divide this by league, which is probably more correct because most players just play against the pitchers in their league, there are some larger outliers. It was over 40% in the National League in the late 40s. And if you do it by team, there are even more outliers. I just talked about the Dodgers. The Cardinals in 1949 faced left-handed starters 60% of the time. So that doesn't happen very much anymore because the rotations are much more strict. But it used to be they would sort of pick and choose a little bit more. Okay, so in order to maintain a full-time platoon, I mean, this is kind of stuff you could all figure out for yourselves, but you need the two players, like Alou and Mota. They stayed healthy, they stayed good. The players at compatible positions have to also sort of stay healthy. Mota or Alou, they could have to suddenly have some emergency games in right field because the right fielder sucked, but that was Clemente, so that didn't happen. And the left fielder was Stargell. They both had great seasons. Stargell had his first great season, and they both were healthy. So really, as good as Alou and Mota were, they were not as good as either of the left fielder or the right fielder, so this was really it. They were stuck into this platoon, so that really helps. The manager needs to stick with it. Most of the managers I discovered had platoons tended to be sort of strong-willed, confident types. And you must have a big enough roster. Now, the problem today, as you can imagine, a typical American League team often has three players on the bench. And you need to have a catcher, you need to have an outfielder, you need to have an infielder. That's basically what you have. So it's very difficult to maintain a platoon with a three-man bench, you can imagine. So we've never had a perfect platoon, so cutting to the chase never happened, okay? In case you're wondering, there's been 136 full-time platoons in 110 years of this data. Okay, so a little bit more than one a year. By position, the most common platoon position is catcher, by far. And I think the answer is obvious. You can't really have a full-time catcher. You need two catchers. So why not platoon them? So if you can find a left-handed, Earl Weaver used to talk about this, right? If you can find a left-handed hitter that can hit, a left-handed catcher that can hit, then it's a good opportunity to platoon because you can't play every day anyway. That doesn't happen as much anymore because most teams now, they platoon their catchers based on their pitcher rather than the other team's pitcher. But it used to be more common. The other positions, I don't know what to read into that. First base a little bit more, but the rest of them, there aren't it's not a big enough sample to draw any conclusions. So here's an example, just to tell you what we're talking about here. Smokey Burgess and Stan Lapata, they were the first players to platoon for 3 years in a row. It's very uncommon, but they did it for 3 years in a row, and as the Phillies catchers. By 10-year intervals, I divided it up into 11 10-year intervals to figure out how often it happened in each interval, and it should stick out to you here that there was one 10-year interval in particular where people platooned a lot, and a lot of people will probably remember this, the late 70s and most of the 80s. The first time it ever happened, I use an asterisk because my database starts in 1908, and my first reading is in 1909, so I'm not terribly confident this is really the first one. And same thing with last. It happened a couple years ago. It happened twice. It'll probably happen again. It's not as common as it used to be. The manager that did it the most was Bobby Cox. He was a Hall of Fame manager, most famous for a long run with the Atlanta Braves. Most of his platooning was during his 5 years with the Blue Jays. I'll get to that in a second. Mock, probably not surprising. He would have platooned more, except like in Montreal, he had a lot of platoons at the beginning of the season, but usually one of the players wasn't good enough, and they ended up having to replace players. You need to have a decent roster for the most part. These teams tended to be better than you would think. Speaker is probably a surprise. Of the first 10 times this happened, Speaker did it 5 of those times. The first was with Elmer Smith and Smokey Joe Wood. He did it twice. The year in between, which is the year they won the pennant, Wood got hurt in the middle of the season and missed some time. Otherwise, they would have qualified that year, too. But Andy did it 3 other times as well. So here's Cox. Mullinix and Orridge, you probably remember, 4 years in a row. One of two pairs ever to platoon 4 times. The other pair being their teammates, Ernie Witt and Bark Martinez, who also did it 4 times. The year in between, 1985, the year they didn't do it, they were perfect into July, and then Buck Martinez broke his leg on a play at home plate against the Mariners, and then they had to get somebody else, basically, to play that half of the platoon. And the next season, they went to spring training, and they just did it all again. Cox wasn't there in 86, but they kept the platoon going. And he also platooned with Collins and Bell in 84, which means he had 3 platoons that one season. You can imagine doing that today with a 3-man bench. Good luck. One of my favorite platoons of all time was the platoon of Stan Musial as the Cardinal center fielder. And you might be thinking, I don't remember that. Well, it turns out that in 1949, Musial played virtually every game against right-handed pitchers in center field. And on his days off, he played right field every day. He had a great year, like he always did. He was, because I said at the beginning, I didn't care what they did on their day off. Well, this is one example. I don't make the rules. Actually, I do make the rules. And Musial was, I think, easily the best platoon player that I uncovered. He hit 390 with power as the platoon center fielder for the Cardinals, which is pretty good. So besides Musial, there are some other Hall of Famers, not mid-career Hall of Famers. The first of those, Tony Perez, on his way up with the Reds. He platooned with Gordy Coleman in 1965. He platooned with Carl Yastrzemski in 1982 at DH. And there was 2 Hall of Famers, of course, only time that's ever happened. He platooned with Pete Rose in 1985. Rose was the manager, and Rose was going for one of the most famous records in the sport. And Rose never played himself against left-handed pitchers the whole season. He played his friend, Tony Perez, instead. And Rose played basically against righties. And so, and then the final time it happens with Ken Griffey just a few years ago. This was his last full season. He came back the next year and was even worse than he had been this year, the tail end of his career. So I mentioned there was never a perfect platoon. There were 3 times that came the closest. The first time in 1972 with the Phillies second baseman. The 2 times that that it did not happen. One time, Harmon played on the wrong day. The other time, September 30th, two games left to go in the season with the record on the line. The manager, that was Lucchesi, I don't remember who it was, played Mike Schmidt in his, I think, third major league game. Mike Schmidt as a second baseman would have been good. So their score overall comes out to 99. The denominator is only 156 because it was a player strike at the beginning of the season, which is how they get surpassed in 1979 by the Twins, because the Twins played a few more games. And these two guys, they played every day at second base as a pair, but twice the wrong guy played, which is why. And they also went the longest into the season with perfection, as far as I've been able to tell, August 8th. And then the third time, a 99 happens with these two guys who I already mentioned. This I wanted to mention because it's Bob Uecker. And so Uecker played, you know, the week half of platoon with Dalrymple that season. And they were perfect into July. And then you can see catchers is tougher because the double headers, you would think, right? That it's hard to, you have to get lucky that a lefty starts one game and the righty starts the other game. So that's the first time this broke. And then they remained imperfect except for one until they called up Jimmy Schaefer as a September call-up, and they were out of the race and everything, so they just gave Schaefer a few starts and dropped their score down. So back to where I started with Alou and Mota. Turns out that Mota actually platooned the year before I got into this story with Bill Verdon, and had a very high score. I mean, I list these scores. I didn't talk much about the scores along the way, but there weren't very many scores as high as 95. But Verdon and Mota had a 97, and then Verdon retired at the end of the season, and that's why they got Alou. They got Alou from the Giants, where he wasn't playing and wasn't hitting. And then Alou came to the Pirates, and they had much success in 66. They basically had the same exact season in 67. 68, Alou almost won the batting title again. He lost on the last day to Pete Rose. But with about 6 weeks to go in the season, Clemente and Sargel both had injury problems. They moved Mota to play the other positions. Alou became the full-time center fielder. So they didn't qualify that third season. And then they lost Mota in the expansion draft after the season. So because we like to argue and fight, I decided that we needed a Hall of Fame, so I am inducting these 11 people into the Hall of Fame as my initial class. It's kind of a big class, but this might be the last time I ever talk about this, so I wanted to get these all out there. Okay, so we got 11 people. Fight. Come on, bring it on. And this is where the story started, these four outfielders, I am done. Thank you very much. Okay. Does anybody have any personal statements they'd like to make?
I have a question about the 1969 New York Mets. Gil Hodges, he seemed to platoon at almost four, maybe five positions. And I was wondering, was that the most extensive platooning in a given year?
Yeah, one of the things you'll discover is that most people say to me, like, what about this, what about that? There's a lot of ways that a platoon does not qualify. Like, in the case of the Mets, by the end of the season, they were platooning at four positions. And catcher, they were platooning, but not necessarily along the left-right spectrum. And in the postseason, they did, which is why your memories of the 69 World Series that people have to do with, you know, Weiss and Condon and the guys that were facing the lefties, because the Orioles pitched lefties in four of the five games. So, whereas in the NLCS, when they placed the Braves, Condon didn't even play, even though he won the MVP of the World Series. So he was platooning at the end, but he didn't platoon the whole season. And that was a lot, yes. He platooned at four positions.
You're correct that the reason that the platoon is pretty much defunct nowadays is because of the short roster, but the other way that teams ameliorate against that is with switch hitters. The proportion of switch hitters today is higher than it's ever been, And if you could just comment on the degree to which switch hitting was adopted by teams as a means of not having to platoon.
Yeah, I don't have much to add to that. That is absolutely true that that is a phenomenon. There are more switch hitters now, but I don't know to what extent teams have done that or not. How the teams are involved, but yes, switch hitters. There's a lot more value to flexibility. I mean, when I was looking at the Moda Alou platoon, you know, one thing I found was that when Sargil got hurt, or you know, I missed a few games, there was another backup outfielder. It wasn't like you had to use this, you know, one guy. They had Jerry Lynch and they had other people, and I think flexibility and switch hitting is very valuable, especially on the bench. Sean.
So all this is based on the knowledge that a platoon advantage exists. Does that date back to the start of baseball history, or can you track where the idea of a platoon advantage even came to people's minds and understanding of the game?
Certainly at the beginning of this database, certainly by the late aughts, you had people. When people talked about the Bosch-Schmidt platoon with the Tigers, they did talk about the fact that this was why this was happening, that they were platooning them because the right-handed hitter had an advantage over the left-handed hitter. It didn't necessarily catch on, but I think that there was some understanding, at least among a small number of managers back then. Whether it goes into the 19th century, I'm not sure.
I noticed that on the list of managers who did a lot of the platoons, that neither Casey Stengel nor Earl Weaver was on the list. I wondered if they had any platoons that made the list or none at all.
Yes, so Stengel had two, and I know that because I had a slide in there, but I took it out. I didn't think I'd have time. He had two. One of them was in 1949, Billy Johnson and Bobby Brown, and the other was... I think 1955, left field, Elston Howard, and I forget who else. The thing about Stengel was he platooned in lowercase p by a lot more complicated means, like having to do with a lot of other issues besides just the left-hander and the right-hander.
It could have been like Howard and Barra or something.
Yeah, they're like job shares more than strict left-right, which is what I'm talking about. Chris?
I think I remember reading, I think from Bill James, that that George Stallings, the Miracle Braves manager, helped popularize this whole this. Did you get any George Stallings things in your set?
Yes. No. I mean, yes, I agree. No. None of Stallings' players qualified. But again, a lot of times, like the people I try and look into, like why aren't they in here? It's because they didn't start platooning until May or something, and then they platoon the rest of the year, so they don't. These are sort of spring to fall platoons.
Exceptionally brief personal question, personal statement leading into a question. My favorite platoon is 91's Mike Paliarulo and Scott Layas with the Twins. Did they show up on your list at all?
I'm pretty sure that they did, yes. I think that platoon that season, yes. Anybody else? One last one, yeah.
The graph where you had it broken down by position, my brain is too addled to figure it out, but I noticed first base was high, shortstop was low. Was there any correlation in the defensive spectrum in that?
I was hoping that would be true, but there were almost no left fielders, for example. I think outfielder is a little bit weird because a lot of outfielders play multiple positions, so I think that there's just much more opportunity to move people around, but there was really very, very little... other than the fact that the DH is very rare to platoon at. That it? Thank you very much.